It's spoiler in time, folks. This is the show we do in addition to Cord Killers, our other show. Cord Killers, we talk about the news, what's happening, how we're going to watch stuff. And this is the show where we get the fun of talking about the stuff we watched. This week, we'll be talking about Extras, episode 4 of season 1, Chernobyl season 1, episode 5. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me, as always, my good friend and co-host, Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, but more importantly, you could call me the bearer of bad news because we're going to check in on the summer movie draft.
What's the bad news?
I mean, the bad news is that Team John Trekker is about to take over one number one spot without even It Chapter 2, which is on track to make bukus of money. You had made a bold call. And by the way, I saw Veronica down at VidCon. She was a bit surprised that you had boldly proclaimed that Team Sword and Laser was going to win by how much? Do you remember what your call was?
I didn't give a how much, but I did. I said we will win, that we will make 1.2 something close to that, and we will win.
Based off of The Lion King, predominantly.
Based off The Lion King, yes. I said The Lion King will make more than $400 million, and we will win.
Yeah. Not so much feeling that right about now.
Why?
Well, because somebody in the chat told me that Crawl had a higher Rotten Tomatoes rating than The Lion King.
Yeah, I think Lion King is at 60% right now.
Yeah. And Rotten Tomatoes is a horrible predictor of box office receipts. So I'm not shaken in my faith in the least. Aladdin got horrible reviews, made $331 million for me. I don't care if it's good. I just care if it brings in the dollars, which The Lion King will.
Man. Well, I guess we'll find out. This is a big weekend.
I just feel you backing away slowly. Like,
I mean, it's like we're going to find out in 20 minutes anyway. So it's like, I ain't got a dog in this fight.
Yeah, it's out this weekend, right?
Yeah.
King of the Jungle?
No, Lion King is July 19th. Oh, no, wait, that's not till September. Oh, man,
yeah,
we got time.
Lion King's out July 19th. And
holy
then
cow.
It, we have to wait all the way to September. Yeah.
I already am seeing It Chapter 2 ads in theaters right now, which makes me feel they're pushing it pretty hard.
Yeah, I'm seeing ads for Lion King, too.
Okay, fair enough.
Been seeing him for a long time.
Legit point.
I went to a laundromat, and it was during Jimmy Kimmel, and the Jimmy Kimmel show was on. It was late at night, and every ad was Lion King.
I mean,
and they had Lion King guests on the show, but it was the ABC machine pumping at all cylinders.
Oof.
Well, I went to a Holiday Inn Express last night. Shall we move on to talk about Chernobyl, the last of the five episodes in the miniseries?
Hoo boy, man. I forgot that this was the last episode. Number one, it loves me a courtroom drama. I loves me a man faced with a choice. And to my surprise, I love our three main protagonists of this show. What I did not expect, everything has been great about the whole Chernobyl experience, but I suspect we're all on the same page that this entire series has been a slingshot. It has been a good television drama, good enough to make you forget that it's real. And then the whole time that slingshot has been pulling tighter and tighter and tighter. And then after you're invested in all these people, that 5-minute montage at the end, that moment that they objectively make it clear that these are real heroes and people who are dealt real injustices and people who, despite all of the efforts of the Soviet Union, whose stories are being told, it was remarkable. It was like watching Endgame and then at the end, finding out that it was a documentary and that 9/11 really happened, you know?
You're like, and Bruce Banner still operates as the Hulk. And here is a picture of the real Bruce Banner.
I broke the hell down crying watching it. I collected myself. I went down and I told Bonnie, like, I just watched a fairly remarkable, man, this ending. And she was like, oh, tell me about it. And I started to tell her. Broke down again a second time. One of the extraordinary things was, and I didn't expect to see this, is when in the epilogue they break that fourth wall and they explain Emily Watson's character didn't really exist. She was an amalgam of these heroic figures, and we wanted to express the consciousness or the conscience. It was amazing. It was amazing, Tom.
Well, and the pictures of our two main characters show how different and yet similar the portrayals were to the real people, especially Skarsgård's character. I was like, wow, that really feels like he captured him. The one that got me was the miners, which they had video of.
Yeah.
And they had a video of a lot of this stuff. It wasn't all stills, but I was like, those people, I mean, there are so many real heroes in the story, but those people are among the tops because they didn't have to do it. They had the leverage to get out of it, but they did it because they knew it needed to be done and they knew they wouldn't get thanked or taken care of because of it. And basically the epilogue says, yeah, we don't really know what happened to any of those people, to be honest.
Yeah. And on top of that, it instantly got a pardon on some of the parts that I thought were weird beats during the show, where it's like, okay, the firefighter already died. Why are we still following his wife? And then, of course, the payoff is you find out that, you know, she had strokes and was told she could never have children. Psych, she totally had a kid and worked out fine. And same thing with those three volunteer heroes who go down and into the water
and shut down the stuff. Yeah.
And they're
and
like,
one of them's still alive.
Two of them are still alive. Today.
Yeah.
And then to end with the that end shot of showing the containment unit and saying probably good for 100 years, and then asking the existential question of like, this is the one thing all of us want to know, is what is the toll in human capital? And the answer is, don't know. Can't know.
Officially,
we'll never know.
35.
Yeah. Although that is a bit of a cheat because, of course, Soviet Union is not exactly around to revise that figure.
Yeah, right. No, I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, the Soviet Union stopped updating that number pretty soon after, a couple of years later.
But it was pretty powerful that Gorbachev himself laid the collapse of the Soviet Union at this story, at the feet of this story.
Yeah. I didn't know how much of a stretch that was. I mean, they quoted him. I know he said that. Gorbachev has talked a lot about the collapse of the Soviet Union and has laid it at the feet of a lot of different reasons over the years. Like maybe it was this, maybe it was that. So out of context, that feels bigger than I think it was. But it's certainly true that he thought it was an element of it. And I think he was right.
Yeah, something about that quote, and I'm speaking artistically, not skeptically or scientifically, but so much of the art of Chernobyl was about not only the hard material cost and the actual labor, but also the psychic toll of decades of lies and narratives and deceit. Kind of that bill came due, or at least that's what's presented in this story, is that bill came due in Chernobyl. And finally, enough people were able to break ranks and say, no, we're going to tell the truth.
Yeah, this is the episode which has the great line, which I looked up immediately and just to see if it was a real line. And all I could find were people praising the line from the episode that, you know, lies incur debts to the truth that eventually must be paid. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along those lines. And I'm like, yes, because it is true. And they tell the story truly that the predilections of the Soviet Union for control of their people, control of their economy, control of secrets, certainly contributed to the disaster of Chernobyl. And we shouldn't not understand that. On the other hand, just because we're not in a communist society, if we're not, doesn't mean that lies cannot still incur debts to the truth that eventually must be paid, just in a different way, right?
Yeah. I guess at this point I want to back out of the epilogue, which I think we all agree was an extraordinary payoff to that entire story, right?
Yeah, and this lies quote that I'm making is what he says right at the end in his sort of his last driving statement when he's allowed to finish. Because that's the bulk of the episode, right? Is the presentation.
That So we'll talk about the presentation, because that also, what I loved about all the courtroom stuff is that there were two things that we wanted. We had the lingering question of whether or not our hero was going to do the hard thing and speak to the real jury, the scientific community. But on top of that, we had our visceral question of what happened. Please explain it to us. And before we talk about that, I do want to just give a tip of the hat to that tender moment between the bureaucrat Boris and our science
and Legasov.
Hero. Yeah. Yeah. That moment, like Boris is sick and he's like, hey, man, I was never a great man. I was a middling man. I assumed because I was handed this task, it wasn't that hard to do. And that moment where it's like, look, they accidentally picked a good man to do a bad job. And that was tender and sweet and powerful in a way that I didn't expect.
Another epilogue gut punch being set up there. I mean, you know, Legasov kills himself because of the opening scene, right? But then to find out that Boris actually lives several years, like it looks like, oh, he's done. Like he's going to die first. No, he doesn't. He makes it to the end of the 90s.
Yeah, which takes us back to the trial, which worked on so many levels. That simple, and I would love to know if they based it on an actual courtroom presentation or whether they developed it for storytelling purposes. But that very simple red and blue placards to just say, this is how simple it all is, America, the world, you know, it's like, let me explain the chain reaction. It was deeply satisfying. And I felt like I grokked that disaster in a way that I'd never had before.
No, and suddenly these scenes from the opening that just felt like drama, were plugged into the overall scenario, and you realize, oh, these guys aren't just nervous because they have a horrible boss. They're nervous because they have a horrible boss who they've tried to warn not to do this thing that'll cause a disaster. Like, that makes it extra tragic. You go through this whole thing not realizing that it wasn't just because they denied that it happened after it happened. It was also because he denied the possibility of it happening before it happened, which makes it doubly worse.
So Robo Jeff in the chat room says that that chain reaction discussion or demonstration was made up for the show, in which case superb storytelling. Either way, at some point, somebody figured out an excellent way to explain this to us.
Made it clear. Yeah. No, I don't know that I could go back and explain it to you now, but while watching it, I entirely followed and I understood. And the whole thing about the xenon, and I'm like, but wait a minute, if that causes the reaction to slow down, why is that a bad thing? And then the penny dropping and like, oh, because it slowed it down at the wrong point and then burned away, leaving nothing to put a brake on it. It's so good. So good.
Yeah. Bryce, did you have anything else you wanted to add on this or?
No, I actually one thing I really did like was how they set up the different witnesses, or the three investigators, to kind of tell the story in the different parts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was a good way to kind of remember, like, to see all the stuff that happens before the very first episode, to get all of the context on all the safety stuff. I mean, that's how this episode starts, is cuts back to before it happens and the actual conversation of, no, we need to do this test. No, they need the power still on. And so I think, you know, the 1, 2, 3 in the court was a really great way to present all that stuff one more time and make sure for whatever reason, if you don't know nuclear, you know, how a nuclear reactor works or the basics of it. I think that was really solid. And you know, just all of the performances were perfect. Because like you said, you just get lost in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I also dug the flashbacks to the precursor moments to, you know, episode one, where we got to see all the stuff that we didn't get to see, you know, like the control rods bopping up and down and people running and, you know, making stuff happen. Real great. Like I didn't understand until this last episode why the IMDb rating was so high on this miniseries, and it really does boil down to this last episode. Everything about this last episode was 11 out of 10.
Yeah, well, and it causes the other episodes to be better in retrospect.
Yes.
It ties everything together, right? You have to watch all five to make a fair judgment.
Well, and it kind of made me want to go back to the first one and see, like, oh, yeah. Now that I know what's going on, could I understand better the control room situation, which is all after this test happened? Yeah.
I think that's an effective choice not to let you understand, because that's where everyone else was, right? Yeah. And no one else understood exactly what was going on either. So you have a little more of the genuine feeling that was happening.
It also, you know, that epilogue forgives some of the other weird shots, like the lingering moment of what I learned at the end was called the Bridge of Death, where everybody just stood there and watching. I'm like,
it's no longer forgiving something. It's fitting it in. And you're like, oh, that's why we did that.
Right.
Now I get it. Right. I didn't know at the time.
Yeah. What an extraordinary piece of storytelling. I look forward to hearing an entire generation who is forced to watch it in high school.
Yeah. No more Threads or The Day After. It's all going to be Chernobyl.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's talk about Extras 104, Les Dennis, starring Les Dennis. And the first one that departs from what I had said would be the general, you know, pattern that I was fine with, where we see our hero Ricky Gervais's character trying to get a line. Instead, he gets cast. He's cast, but it's a theater play. It's not a movie. And then his friend is only there to kind of support him, and you don't get a love interest for her. So it breaks out of all of that pattern. Well, I guess you do kind of get a friend interest, but it's not a love interest. I was thrilled that they broke out of the pattern, and I still loved every minute of it.
All right, can we start with the friend side story? Like, what a deliciously bizarre story of this obsessive. Like, I have a feeling that this will not be the end of this character. From what
I also had the feeling that this has got to be drawn from a real life situation, right? Like, there's a real choreographer and a real daughter that inspired this story. It just feels too weird not to be real, right?
Yeah, too specific to not be a real thing. And I all day today, I had stuck in my head the food, glorious food, where he's correcting her, something, custard. Anything worth doing is worth doing right, custard. I'll tell you my favorite thing about this episode is we get something that we never saw even a hint of from Ricky Gervais in The Office, which was genuine concern, empathetic concern, that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And granted, it goes sideways and gets awkward when he tips off, less too early that his, you know, girlfriend is making out with people backstage. But that anxiety that he's feeling, you could tell he really feels bad and doesn't want this weight. He doesn't want to watch this guy be dating a girl who's running around on him.
Yeah. And it's played so well, because he exhales and sighs in relief when Dennis tells him that he's not going to marry the woman, because he feels, oh, good. I don't have to be carrying this weight that I'm not telling you something you need to know. And so I think that's why it's believable that it spills out like, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I saw this, and then realizing, oh, wait a minute.
Like,
Dennis wanted to be the one letting her off the hook. He didn't want to feel like he was avoiding a bullet, and now you've ruined it.
And in that regard, it perfectly nails that awkward dynamic that would later, in my mind, become weaponized and perfected in the U.S. version of The Office, where it's like, we were with you too many steps, you know?
Why did you do that?
Yeah. There was a bit of a culture gap where it took me a while to figure out that, oh, I guess this guy was the host of the UK version of Family Feud, and I guess they called it Family Business or whatever it was.
I actually am not familiar with Les Dennis either, but I quickly picked up like, oh, he's a game show host who's on the downslide, trying to figure out how to stay in the game. That's all I need to know.
Right. But even then, I mean, it played just great. This might be one of my favorite episodes so far.
Yeah, it might be for me too. Partly just because it's different. But then, spoiler, do you want to know what the next, because they're all named after the guest star. Do you want to know what the next episode is called?
Is it Patrick Stewart?
No, it's not.
What is it?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yeah. No, I do remember this one. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, right. You've already seen these.
Well, I did, but I've forgotten them. I saw them over a decade ago. Like, so, to be honest.
And I know the hype around the Patrick Stewart one is hot. So I'm looking forward to continuing to watch extras. This is great.
So much better than The Office. Everybody who's out there recommending the UK Office, knock it off. Please recommend extras instead. It's so much better. It's objectively better in every way. I would love to see the U.S. version of extras.
I never agree with those kind of statements, but I agree with the sentiment behind it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not objectively better. There's no such thing.
Extras is on Netflix.
That's right. Here in the United States, it is on the Netflix, and I think it might be on Netflix outside the U.S. too. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us, supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/cordkillers, where you get these spoiler end times a little earlier, and we shall spoil you again next week.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.